Welcome to the Red Hot Chili Writers Podcast. We're your hosts, Vaseem Khan and Abir Mukherjee, two crime authors ready to expose themselves on air for your titillation, edification and amusement.
We'll be talking life, pop culture and the pursuit of the creative arts, all seasoned with just a dash of garam masala.
It's been another intriguing couple of weeks on the world stage as North Korea tries and fails to send a spy satellite into space and US President Biden takes a tumble on stage. Perhaps the most important news story of the week is about a black bear who strolled into a bakery in Connecticut, USA and ate no less than 60 cupcakes. My co-host and I have been known to put away our share of cakes, but we can barely compete with our Earth sign friend. Abir, how are you?
How am I? I was all right till I heard that joke. And what do I call you? You missed out the most important news of this week. We all have to call you Mr. President now, isn't this right?
You can if you wish. You've called me much worse. But we'll talk about that in a second, because what I should say is that we've got a slightly special episode in the sense that we're not going to have our preamble, at least not on our own, because we are joined right from the off by an author who is our special guest for the day. So we are joined by Harini Nagendra. Harini is an ecologist, a professor of sustainability, and the best-selling author of the Bangalore Detectives Club. Harini, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vaseem. Thank you, Abir. I just love the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Harini, we're forgetting to say that you are stuck in the same hotel as Vaseem right now. So you have my sympathies. So your torture is not just going to be for this half hour. It's going to be, I don't know, 2 days you have of him.
What you're referring to is the fact that Harini and I are in Toronto at the Motive Festival, which is one of Canada's biggest crime fiction festivals. And we had a lovely breakfast yesterday.
Oh, did you? Oh, lovely.
I had the pancakes with the maple syrup and the cream. I'm not so sure what was his breakfast.
Yeah, there. It was lovely, was in quote marks, because I ordered, I'm trying to be healthy, right? As you know, I've been diagnosed with slightly elevated cholesterol levels. So my wife has been phoning to make sure that I don't sneak off and eat all sorts of rubbish while I'm out here. And unfortunately, the breakfast that I ordered, which I thought was going to be a big bowl of oats, et cetera, turned out to be the size of a thimble.
So what did you do? Did you then just order pancakes?
I just ate some of Harini's. Oh, okay. Now, I should warn you, my friend, I should warn you that Harini is probably the smartest person that we've ever had on this show. She's a proper academic, had a long track record, worked with Nobel Prize winning scientists, has written over 200 research papers, whereas I dare say, my friend, that the most you've ever done is put 200 sheets of paper into that printer of yours.
Yes, and I must say, I mean, this is poor Harini. You know how the mighty have fallen. One day with Nobel Prize winners, the next day with us. Vaseem, you've got some questions, have you, for Harini?
We have lots of questions for Harini, but before that, we have a couple of announcements.
Oh, do we?
Yes. So
I should really read the notes, shouldn't I?
You should. It would help if you could actually read good.
Right. Carry on. What are the announcements?
An announcement from our friends at Joffe Books.
Oh, yes. Yes.
They are an independent publisher and they run something called the Joffe Books Prize. And that is a competition that aims to champion authors from Black, Asian, and minority ethnic backgrounds, who are, as we know, still quite underrepresented in crime fiction publishing. And it's open to debut writers, previously published, or even self-published writers. The winner is offered a prize package consisting of a two-book publishing deal with Joffe Books, a £1,000 cash prize, and a £25,000 audiobook offer from Audible for the first book. So quite a substantial set of prizes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we should enter. What do you reckon? The three of us should write a book. We should pen it under Harini's name because that's how we'll get most traction, because, you know, she's the bright one. And then we split the winnings. What do you think?
You guys can write it and I can split the winnings. You're in.
Oh, lovely. Oh, great. You realize it's the Bengali's role to manage, right? The writing has to be done by other people. So I'm afraid that the management role is mine, genetically and hereditary. And culturally, I can't do much hard work, so it falls upon the two of you.
The prize is now open for submission.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. So if you are Black, Asian, or from a minority ethnic background, and you fancy a bit of writing and possibly winning a wonderful book deal and audiobook deal, please do enter. And that is the Joffe Books Prize. And submissions close when, Vaseem?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
It's 1st of June 2023, so you've got a bit of time.
And that's when it's opened up.
Oh, it's opening now. You've got a lot of time.
That's in the past. And unless you've got a time machine, Marty McFly, you're not going to be able to...
I literally have no idea where we are in time right now.
All of that information is available on their website. So please, if you're interested, have a look. A couple of other things that I thought might be nice. So two people wrote to us, one of them from Canada, to say how much we enjoy the podcast. So I thought we'd mention. Do you want to read those out?
Jeanette Miller wrote, I really enjoy your podcasts. Keep up the great work. Then we also have Rob Lanigan in Canada saying, I am still enjoying your podcasts. I don't know why the still is in there. Actually, I can figure it out. You know, most people don't enjoy them anymore, but they just pop up on their sort of podcast feed now and again, and they feel this duty to listen. But can I say to both Jeanette and to Rob, thank you very much. And to all our other listeners, wherever you are across the world, we value each and every one of you. Vaseem will probably be coming to stay at each and every one of your houses at some time, because that's the Asian way, isn't it? We don't like hotels. We'd much rather stay with friends and family.
What else? I've been wandering around Toronto. I don't know, Harini, did you get a chance to... You said you were going out yesterday. Did you get a chance to mooch around Toronto for a bit?
A bit, yes. I have a friend's daughter here, so she took me out for a bit. And I actually got to ride the subway, whatever they call it here.
Did you manage to go to a cannabis shop?
A what?
Well, I was wandering around the old town, and I have to say my reaction was similar, because I hadn't realized that cannabis is legal in Toronto. And I came to a section where virtually every second shop was a cannabis shop. Did you know cannabis was legal in Toronto, Mr. Mukherjee?
I had a feeling it was. I think it was legalized a wee while ago. In fact, I know it was because a friend of mine brought back chocolate bars, which were cannabis infused, a couple of years ago. I'm not quite sure how he managed that. They were well wrapped, shall we say.
Well, this explains why Canadians seem to always be so smiley and happy all the time.
Well, they are, aren't they? They're lovely people, the Canadians, aren't they? They're like the chilled brother of America.
I had a mooch around the shop. I have to say, it's very intriguing. I mean, the salesperson spent a lot of time talking to me before I told them that I've never actually smoked a cigarette in my whole life, so I'm not likely to start on cannabis.
But you don't need to smoke it, though. There are many ways to enjoy the product.
Yeah, I asked them if there was a cannabis infused chapati option, but
and they said no. There's a gap in the market there, Vaseem. You need to exploit that.
Cannabis curry and chapati. Yeah.
Oh, my word. I see here you've written some sort of joke. Do you want to do this joke of yours?
Well, I thought it might be coming from a Scotsman. This is a Scotsman in Canada joke.
Okay. Is it as bad as your normal jokes?
Why don't you read it out?
I'm not reading it. I think it's offensive. I want you to read it.
I think we should get Karini to read it.
I don't think you want to destroy Harini's career. I think you should read it. You've written it. You should read it.
I didn't write it. I found it.
Okay, you found it.
Harini, would you like to do this joke?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I will read what Vaseem has written here, okay?
I've not written. I found it online.
What Vaseem has, air quotes, found on the internet, which is a Scottish/Canadian joke, ladies and gentlemen. A Scotsman was invited for a visit to the home of his Canadian friend. Soon after the Scotsman arrived, he glanced out the window to see a huge beast just outside. He pointed and asked his Canadian friend, and this is where it gets bad, "Och, lad, what's that?" The Canadian replied, "Oh, that's a moose." The Scotsman stared in disbelief and replied, "That's a moose? Well, how big are your cats around here?" You hear the tumbleweed just going past there. Not a single one of our listeners laughed at that, because it was awful.
It's so bad. I'm laughing because it's just so bad.
Harini, you're supposed to be the intellectual in the room. You can't laugh at this.
I told you this is going to be disastrous as soon as
you. Oh, mate, you should never have agreed to come on this.
You know what? You know what? Let's move into our chatting to Harini about her life.
Yeah. Let's see if Harini can resurrect improve on the damage that's been done. What's the term? Fix the damage that she's done to her career by coming on. Let's talk to her. Right. Why don't you start, Vaseem? Ask her a very important question.
Well, let's start at the beginning, Harini. Tell us where you grew up.
Till I was 10, I was in Delhi. But since then, I've been in Bangalore most of the time. I mean, I've lived outside a bit of time in the US, in Europe, but always come back to Bangalore. So I'd say Bangalore.
You're a professor in sustainability. You study ecology. So lead us through that process of, you know, you've grown up in Bangalore, you've gone to university. Ecology is not really a mature field in India. So many years ago, you got interested. Why?
How? I got interested through a very strange way. I was actually running away from the lab. So I did an undergrad degree in microbiology, chemistry and zoology, and then joined the Indian Institute of Science, which is India's biggest science university, for a PhD, a master's and a PhD, an integrated PhD in biological sciences. So most of the 6 out of the 7 departments in biology were doing some form of molecular biology. And in a sense, you know, moving from microbiology to molecular biology, except I found I hated the lab. And I got in at 6 in the morning and I'd get out at midnight and just wouldn't see the sun all day. So I came into ecology from a strange route. I wasn't a bird watcher, wasn't a naturalist. It was just, I landed up listening to my PhD advisor, Madhav Gadgil, who's one of India's best known ecologists, speak at a conference, and serendipity all the way, because I went to hear someone else speak and they were behind on schedule, so Madhav was speaking. And he was talking about the importance of doing science relevant to India, relevant to India's problems. Molecular biology was really expensive. You know, you could pay, and this is, I'm talking about early 90s, like for a very, you know, like for 3 ml of an enzyme, you could pay like a lakh of rupees. It was a lot of money then. And taxpayers' money. And you know, an experiment wouldn't work. You'd feel like you wasted the whole thing. So anyway, I met Madhav. He said, come in, you can start working in ecology. I didn't have any coursework. I didn't have any background. So I had to pretty much hit the ground running, you know, learn remote sensing, learn coding because we didn't have money for software. And here I am a few years later. So it was fun. I think what I liked best was the do-it-yourself part of the whole thing, because like I said, I had absolutely no background in this thing, and he was nice enough to take me out.
Well, define for us what you actually mean by ecology or the study of ecology.
So I work at the intersection of a lot of different things that human beings are doing to the earth, right? So we're destroying the, and this is going to be depressing as hell, but we're destroying the biodiversity, we're cutting down all our forests, there's climate change going on, there's pollution going on. And I work at the intersection of all of these. And my goal is actually, so I'm really an optimist, and I'm interested in is finding out what are the conditions that make people be a positive part of the change. I mean, obviously, we're doing a lot to the planet, right? But there are things that we could do to fix damage we've done, and there are lots of places where there are seeds of good things happening, you know, communities coming together, working to do something. That's really what I do, to try and understand what are the conditions, whether they're social or economic or political or ecological, whatever, that make people do good things for the planet.
And how did you make the leap from there to writing 1920s crime fiction? Because that doesn't seem like an obvious next step to me.
So I think that many of us, or all of us, I was an early reader, and I used to write a lot when I was a kid. And my poor unsuspecting dad was the recipient of all my writing. He had to read my stories when they were written for him. And I wrote short stories when I was older, you know, for newspapers and things like that. But when I started my PhD and started science writing, popular science writing, that took over for a long time, I always felt I wanted to write a novel. And I started my urban ecology research in 2006. I was looking at a pile of archival documents about old Bangalore and talking to my mom about how life was in the wild back. So I guess the main character landed in my head. I mean, Tateri, who's the young woman who's the protagonist, she sort of parachuted in my head and said, write about me. I mean, I read two genres, essentially. I read fantasy and I read mystery. And if she was going to be in the 1920s, Bangla, she was not going to be fantasy. She was going to be mystery. That was 2006, 2007. And it took the book was published in 2021. So it took me a while to learn how to write a book from start to finish.
Tell us what the Bangalore Detectives Club is about quickly.
So the book is set in 1920s Bangalore, which is governed by the Mysore Maharaja, but also the British colonial empire. So it's an unusual, it's a princely state. There are two different heads of the state. And it's set in 1920s where Bangalore was a cosmopolitan city where you have people from all over the world. And you have a young doctor called Ramu and his wife, 19-year-old Kaveri. Kaveri's just married. She moves into Bangalore. They go for a swanky dinner to the Century Club and she stumbles upon a corpse. And she's young, interested in mathematics, likes swimming, likes driving her husband's Ford. And of course, when she stumbles into the murder, she wants to sleuth. So that's what starts off the Bangalore Detectives Club.
And Harini, tell us about the next in the series.
Murder Under a Red Moon is the second one in the series, where Kaveri is now well known as an amateur private detective. And she picks up a case under the time of a lunar eclipse, which is the red moon. And a lunar eclipse is supposed to be a time of great ill luck in the Indian context, because everyone stays home. It's inauspicious to be out. Of course, Kaveri, that makes her want to go out and sleuth. And she goes to the mill to solve a case of embezzlement and stumbles into murder again. But there's a few things going on. There's a mysterious Swami who's a god man, and is he a good guy? Is he one of the bad guys? That's going on. There's a drug smuggling ring going on, and there's a few other things.
The mysterious Swami, does he look a bit like Vaseem?
He's got a large belly.
Look at this face. Does this face
he's
look
got like a, he's got a large belly, did you say? Well, it sounds like Vaseem.
Look at this face. Does this face look mysterious to anyone?
And Harini, I want to know about the crime writing scene, the crime mystery writing scene in India. Mm-hmm. How is that developing?
There are a few good writers now. There were always some. There were like two or three people that I could count. That two or three people might be now six or seven people. So I'd say it's a growing field. But it's really something that is picking up now.
Now, Harini,
and who would you recommend?
Wait a second. I'm going to take umbrage to this,
yes,
because you are a scientist. You believe in statistics. Now, when you say six is growing out of 1.5 billion people, I'm not really sure. Technically speaking, you're right. It's growing. It's grown from three, but it's not really what
It's doubled. Say. It's doubled.
Yeah. But
it's interesting. I'm talking about the English crime writing fiction. So if you look at, for instance, Tamil or Bengali or so many other Indian languages, there's been a long tradition. I mean, Bengali has had such good crime writing, and some of it, like Feluda, has been translated. But yeah.
Then unfortunately, Abhir came along.
Yeah, killed it, stone dead.
I'm more intrigued by why you chose 1920s Bangalore. Mm.
The themes I'm covering are broader themes of societal transformation, especially of women, because Kaveri is, for instance, trying to study, and of course, women's suffrage. People want, women want to get voted and have the right to be voted for, and there are also the issues of independence in Mysore, because Mysore is a princely state, and so 1920s is a perfect time for a constellation of all of this to come together. Kaveri actually can't go to college till the late 1920s. I mean, if I'm going to stay to the story, so I have to figure out what to do there. But women's, Bangalore was one of the first places in India for women to actually get the right to vote. So there's that part of it. And then, of course, the independence struggle. But the 1920s are also just such a fascinating age. There's the Mysore King who wants to modernize Bangalore, and Bangalore is the first city in Asia to be electrified. There's a whole bunch of things going on. I originally set this in the 1890s, and it wasn't nearly as much of a fun time, so I moved everything over to the 1920s.
Quite right. The 20s are brilliant. Probably better than the 2020s so far, anyway. What are you working on next?
Book three, which I just turned in, and as both of you know well, Edward, Prince of Wales, came to India in 1921, and he visited Bombay and Calcutta, and there were riots and people threw him out. He went to the forest to lick his wounds and do some hunting, and then he came back to Bangalore in 1922, January. And from all accounts we have, written accounts, it went perfectly well. The king managed it, and everyone in Bangalore cheered him, contrary to Bombay and Calcutta. But of course, what I have written in is much more of a complex story. So there are the people, the freedom fighters coming in, and there are people who are escaping from the law. There's a circus going on, and a mysterious magician who may or may not be involved with the independence movement has disappeared from Lion Cage. And so Kagu gets out to solve that mystery.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, when can we expect to read that? When will that be?
March next year, I think.
Good, good. Something to look forward to. Now, I have to go back to my... We've talked about important people. We've talked about the Maharaja of Mysore. We've talked about the Prince of Wales. We have to talk about the new president, I'm afraid. Mr. President, you want to tell us what you are now president of?
Well, I must first correct you, my not very learned friend. My official title is not president. You are referring, of course, to the fact that I am the newly elected chair.
Chair, yeah. You look more like a chair than a president, to be fair.
Why did I know that was coming? The chair of the UK's Crime Writers Association, which is the oldest and largest association of crime writers here in the UK. It's been around for 70-odd years and represents crime writers, crime writing in general. You know, it's had its ups and downs over that very lengthy period, but... I'm following in the footsteps of people like Ian Rankin and Peter James and Lindsay Davis. So it's quite a responsibility. I wasn't sure entirely that I wanted to take it on to begin with. But then I thought if we want to modernize institutions such as the CWA or to make them more representative of the kind of crime writing that's going on today, which includes us, then roll up your sleeves and get to work. So, yeah, I'm delighted to do it. I'm going to be doing it for the next couple of years. And I'm hoping that the CWA recovers some of the luster that some people in some quarters feel it may have lost over the last couple of decades, and becomes truly a home to writers from everywhere.
Well, it sounds wonderful. And speaking frankly, I know a lot of people who have felt excluded or not felt very warmly towards the CWA are now giving it a second look. Thanks to your election and the election of people like
William Shaw, Nadine Matheson, Stella Oney, yes. Morgan Witzel. So yes, the board has changed dramatically over this last year, and you know I'm honestly optimistic about the whole thing. I understand, and I'm not the kind of person, as you well know, to sweep things under a carpet. Yes, the CWA.
You won't even buy a carpet.
I think that when you air issues, you can tackle them. And if you don't talk about them, you can't fix them. Yes, looking forward to it. And that, I think, is all that needs to be said about the CWA. What have you been up to? We didn't actually discuss...
I've had hay fever. I've been ill all week. I'm a bit better now. I got a wee bit drunk on Friday night and then I had a hangover on Saturday, and we had some friends around. We sat in the garden all day and it was lovely. And I think just sitting in the garden all day gave me hay fever. So I was ill on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I was better yesterday.
I've never had hay
fever before. I have had hay fever, but there's so much pollen. Now that we live out in the sticks, darling, now that we live in the country, there's a lot more pollen. And I was interviewing last night, I was interviewing Drita Say Mitchell. And she was saying that what's happened is that in London, they planted a lot more trees recently, but they're all male trees. I didn't know you could get male trees and female. Maybe Harini can tell us about this, but apparently male trees have a lot more pollen, and so the hay fever is a lot worse. Is this true? You can get male trees and female trees, Harini. Do you know this?
Now, in many parts of Europe and the US, they produce tree seeds and pollination, but from tissue culture. And they pollen is what male trees produce, and they're producing it to pollinate, but of course, they're not actually propagating by pollination. So it's one of those stupid things we have done. But what it does do is give you hay fever.
Right. So all the pollen, instead of going into nice lady trees, is going up my nose, is the short answer, exactly. Ladies and gentlemen. And this is a problem that is going to get worse over time. Not just in London, but throughout Europe and America. Thank you, Harini, for that. I mean, I think that answer is far more than I expected or our listeners ever expect from this programme, I would imagine. So thank you so much. You're right, Vaseem. You know, this calibre of guest, we could actually solve all the world's problems.
You just get a whole bunch of depressing answers.
Depressing answers, that's all right. You know, it's a start.
Well, anyway. Less depressing than having to look at his face.
Oh, harsh.
You know, I only mean because you're... looking a bit bedraggled because of the hay fever. Normally, of course.
Yes, yes, I am. I'm basically out of my sick bed just to talk to the two of you. You two haven't even left your hotel rooms, right? And here's me having to get up out of bed, and yet you guys are just lounging.
It is rather lovely. We're on the harbour front in on the shores of Lake Ontario, and we are going to be
swimming
a soiree later on, a reception for all of the writers who are speaking at the Motive Festival. So you have every sympathy from me.
Oh, well, that's good. I like that, Mr. Chair. May I just say it's been wonderful to have you on, Harini. Thank you for raising the tone of the debate, and thank you for your insight into 1920s Bangalore and the problem of pollen, amongst two out of many things. So thank you for that. I do hope that you manage to spend the next few days as far from Vaseem as you can possibly be. But thank you. Thank you for coming on. Vaseem, do you have any words that you want to say before we close?
It is going to be difficult for Harini to be too far away from me because we're on the same panel tomorrow.
Oh, dear. You can claim hay fever, Harini. That's what I would do. Just say you've got hay fever and cancel.
This has been great fun. Thank you.
Well, you say that. It's generally fun for our guests. It's hard for me. You know, I have to do this every 2 weeks with this guy. Sometimes he's in London. Sometimes he's in New York. Sometimes he's in Toronto. Anyway, what should we say? Well, let's just say goodbye to our listeners. Once again, dear listeners, if you've liked the show, can we ask you to please leave a review, sign up for regular episodes using your favorite podcast app, and please do spread the word. Now, Chairman President Vaseem, do you think we could become icons of sustainability like Harini?
Well, looking at the state of us, and particularly you, at this moment in time, I think we've already gone way past our sell-by dates.
I think so. I think we are very close to, we are certainly perspired, close to expired. Ladies and gentlemen, on that unsavory note, until the next episode, we have been your friends, the Red Hot Chili Writers.